Good morning, and thanks for making it on this Saturday early start. What the beyond of teaching, or I guess I should say here, the beyond of the school, is really about is not finishing oneself, not passing, not completing. It's about allowing subjectivity to be unlawfully overcome by others. A radical passion and passivity such that one becomes unfit for subjection because one does not possess the kind of agency that can hold the regulatory forces of subjecthood, and one cannot initiate the interpretative torque that biopower subjection requires and rewards." Unquote. I decided to begin with this quote from Fred Moten and Stefano Harney's book, The Undercommons, because it invokes in such a concise form so many of the forces and vectors of power that act on us in educational spaces. And it also underlines the urgency behind a global conversation on these spaces as they find themselves increasingly under siege. Although coming from a distinctively different angle, I think that the quote speaks extremely well to Tom Holert's approach in this project. As a larger project that will culminate in an exhibition in about a year's time here at the HKW, Education Shock, Learning, Politics and Architecture in the Global 1960s and 70s, grew out of a previous project called Learning Laboratories, which took place in 2016 and 17 at the BAC in Utrecht. But some of the central questions that Tom Holert puts forward as a curator to his many collaborators in this project have been subject matter of his writings for a much longer time, namely those regulatory forces of subjecthood and the peculiar dialectics of power, of emancipation and subjection in the transition from the political economy of Fordism to a post-Fordist knowledge economy. One of the central premises of Education Shock, then, is that this transition from disciplinary models to models of control has been registered and brought to articulation nowhere quite as distinctively as in the various sites of the subject's formation and social integration, particularly in educational institutions. In this project, the scientific experimentalization of pedagogy and the development of new technologies of power become the central actors, if it were, in what is both a historical theater and a biopolitical test site, taking form on the stage of the school. In a time when we begin to see ever more clearly the massive failures of neoliberal concepts of education and the treatment of cognitive abilities and capacities as economic resources alone, it is of utmost importance to bring the experiences of past struggles back into the conversation, to rescue them from the kind of oblivion and amnesia that has been the fate of many of the architectural sites discussed in this project, especially perhaps here in Berlin. We at the Haus der Kulturen der Welt are extremely grateful to Tom Holert for having initiated this project, which is growing into one of the major pillars of the HKWs, of the House's ongoing engagement with educational policies and radical pedagogies, which was pursued here by many. I will just name one of them, was our dear former colleague Sylvia Fehrmann and her project Schools of Tomorrow, still ongoing and also partnering with Education Shock. And after the exhibition Neolithic Childhood, a project that took here some 2 years ago and that I was fortunate to co-curate with Tom Holert, this is our second major collaboration with Tom as an institution. My thanks goes to Tom and our common team here at the HKW and to all those who followed the invitation to be with us here today. I'm also grateful for the support we received from the Fritz Thyssen Stiftung für Wissenschaftsförderung, which enabled our gathering here today. Thank you, and I'll hand over to Marlene Schröder.
Yeah, good morning and a warm welcome. My name is Marlene Schröder. I'm part of the coordination team here at the Department of Visual Arts and Film, together with Ciele Haase, and I would like to say some words on the broader framework of this conference today, which is the research and exhibition project Education Shock. Education Shock is a collaborative project, a long-term project that consists of several equal and complementary components, one of them being the conference today and tomorrow. In addition to that, as Anselm has said already, we will open an exhibition here in September 2020 in the large exhibition hall here at HKW. This exhibition will consist of archival material as well as artworks, among them a number of new productions. And all those material will be shown in form of case studies. We will work with the exhibition designers, Kooperative für Darstellungspolitik, who will be here also today to present their proposal for the architecture. The graphic design will be realized by the graphic design studio HIT, which is Annette Lux and Lina Grumm. On the occasion of the opening, a publication will be released. And another very important component of this project will be a cultural education program by the name of Bildung in Beton, which is developed and coordinated by the Cultural Education Department here at HKW. Eva Stein and Anna Bartels are the project coordinators behind this project. This project is basically a collaboration with 8 schools in Berlin from the districts of Märkisches Viertel, Lichtenberg, and Neukölln-Kreuzberg. And in the framework of this program, the students of those schools and probably also their teachers will work together with artists and collectives in order to reflect on their learning environments in a kind of artistic research process and to speculate on future schools, future learning environments. We plan to offer guided tours to those schools in the exhibition period to make the outcome of this process also accessible to the public. We will also have a film series that is currently developed by Ludger Blanke in collaboration with the Arsenal Institute for Film and Video Kunst. And in addition to that, we will have a number of collaborations with institutions, initiatives, artists group. Among them, together with Nicola Lepp, who will develop an audio walk in an historical educational building together with her students as part of the Department of Kulturarbeit at the University of Applied Sciences in Potsdam. We will have a collaboration with Elke Bayer, who is also one of the speakers of the conference, and the Habitat Unit at the School of Architecture, Technical University Berlin. The Harun Farocki Institute is one of the main partners, as well as the BAK, Basis für aktuelle Kunst in Utrecht. And as Anselm also said before, we will have talks and discussions on the framework of the Schools of Tomorrow program here at HKW, Schools of Tomorrow 3, in September next year. Yes, so far on the overall framework of this conference, and the long-term project Education Shock, and yeah, I would now make space for Tom Hulat.
Yes, hello and welcome to all of you having found the way, your way through the cold but bright day. Following up on what Anselm Franke and Marlene Schröder, whom I'd like to thank for the words, have just said, I wanted to give another a very short account or introduction into the Bildungsschock, Education Schock project as a whole and into today's and tomorrow's conference. We've planned, as has been said, this conference to be a significant step in a long-term process of research and development in which HKW's Department of Education and the Department of Visual Art and Film join forces. Today we are around 9 to 10 months away from the exhibition's opening in September 2020, the exact date of which is still to be determined. For everyone who's ever worked on a multi-component and multi-partner project such as this, that may sound alarmingly close a date, and in fact it is not really a lot of time that is left here, considering the fact that in these remaining months, not only the exhibition and its numerous case studies and contributions are to be produced and put into their place, literally, but moreover, a publication is scheduled to be released at the time of the opening, and thus to be worked upon, I mean, right now. Which brings me to one of the purposes and aims of this conference. With so many partners, experts, colleagues, and comrades working on case studies and contributions, many of which aren't giving papers today and tomorrow, but are some of whom are present here, for which I'm thankful, it seemed advisable to provide an occasion and an event to generate ideas and texts that are going to be then filtered into the exhibition, into the online presence of the project, and last but not least, into the book publication. Another idea we connect with this conference is its potential to become an actual and generative working group session involving those who are directly participating in and contributing to Education Schock's various components, as well as addressing an interested audience that is invited and encouraged to enter the conversation. In the best of all cases, we, the project team at HKW, will have a lot to chew on, a lot of ideas, feedbacks, advices, and criticisms to digest and work with in the subsequent phases of the project's development. Hence, in a way, this is an opportunity to take stock and invigorate research and production. So, what is the project about? And what are some of Education Schock's undergirding premises and goals? Anselm already mentioned a couple of them, and I will keep this the following very brief in order to then enter the actual conference. So I need the first, thank you. As Anselm mentioned, one of the many beginnings of the project has been an exhibition at a conference that I conceptualized and organized together with BAK, Basis für aktuelle Kunst, in Utrecht, and in particular with Maria Lavajova, BAK's director, and one of BAK's curatorial assistants, Hitte van Groeningen, in 2016 and 17. The exhibition that has been designed by the Kooperative für Darstellungspolitik and thus became a first itinerary of our cooperation was of a much smaller size than the one we are actually planning. It had a deliberately sketchy and workshop-like character, actually inviting people to use the exhibition space as a space of study. The closing conference, titled The Real Estate of Education in January 2017, addressed issues of educational placemaking, education as neoliberal commodity, and claims to and practices of radically different kinds and modes of pedagogy and spatiality. The question undergirding the entire endeavor could be the entire endeavor of Education Shock Learning Laboratories could be put like this. How exactly the politics of space and the politics of education in their local specificity and their transnational interconnectedness were entangled during these decades of the 1960s and 70s. What were the pedagogical, political, economical, and anthropological premises informing the production and the performance of educational space and educational time? How was the design of learning environments believed to tap the so-called educational reserves, Bildungsreserven, of a given population and to produce a particular kind of workforce demanded by the economic sector, at least in the global north, increasingly calling for skilled, for knowledge workers? And how this design could provide a learning experience that leaves behind the disciplinary models of the Fordist socio-economic formation? And what about the differences in planning and designing educational space when considered in a South-North perspective? In 1968, urban theorists and architects Stephen Carr and Kevin Lynch, and here now we're staying again in the global north a little bit, published an article titled Where Learning Happens. This phrase could be taken as another motto or guideline for our project, as it emphasizes the spatial condition and, as the article made sufficiently clear, the necessity to conceive and of education in the city, of mobility and learning, of environment and pedagogy differently, not least in terms of a politics of form and an aesthetics of infrastructure. Hence, the project is attending to learning and teaching, education and pedagogy, all terms that are, of course, in need to be qualified with great care, in their relation to spaces, spatialities, or spatial events, rather than to architecture in a more narrow understanding of the term. I could also speak of educational spatiality in terms of infrastructures of learning. Here, a central area of the research that is conducted in the project comes to the fore. Infrastructures of learning, of course, encompass architectural manifestations of the ideas and ideologies shaping learning and education, but even more so, these infrastructures are where the performance of the learners literally take place and usually transform it. The historical focus of Education Shock, as it was the case with learning laboratories, are the long 1960s and 1970s. By calling upon these decades, I roughly refer to an era that was framed on the one end of the chronological spectrum by the caesura that was the launch of Sputnik 1 on October 4, 1957. This shape-shifting event engendered the so-called Sputnik crisis, or as it was called in the German-speaking world, the Sputnik shock. It is one of a number of shocks or disruptions alluded to by the title Education Shock or Bildungsschock. This much decried Sputnik crisis, a major moment of narcissistic distress of the US and the entire West, led to, as you well know, to an intensification of the Cold War space race. It was also, in accordance with this system's rivalry, co-constitutive of an unparalleled expansion and extension of the realms of scientific knowledge production and education from preschool to higher education and further on to the novel notions of continued or lifelong learning. And this expansion in space and time entailed a massive production of educational space, of urban development, of technological innovation, of public spending, and new educational policies, as well as all kinds of resistance and counter-educational activity. It was realized pretty quickly that a response to the crisis of education and knowledge production that continues to primarily rely on economic planning and the construction of educational facilities such as schools and universities alone could be a dead end. Future Shock, the 1970 futurologist bestseller by Alvin and Heidi Toffler, pointed out that the shock that traumatizes the present as arriving, as hitting from the future, also crucially concerns education and the way education was a need to be radically reconsidered, reorganized, and reconfigured in space and time. The Tofflers, in accordance with many other observers, were convinced that the schoolhouse, even in its most progressive variants, has become obsolete and anachronism, as learning under the impression of socio-technological developments and the mass media had transformed into an activity dispersed throughout the urban fabric, the global village, and the individuals and entire society's lifetimes. Among the immediate consequences of a growing wariness with regard to the future of the production of educational space, you can find design measures to enable the mobilization and flexibilization of the learning experience in many different ways. Driving around the new town, the new suburbia, to provide students with instructional material in their extramural everyday life in the mid-1960s could be one example. A design for a mobile teaching package commissioned by the Regional Educational Buildings Institute for Africa from the early 1970s would be another. Both bespeak, like so many spatial programs and designs that characterize progressive educational architecture and learning environments of the 1960s and 70s, an insistence on the necessity to conceive of educational spaces as matters of design and the learning taking place in these spaces as something strongly informed by the physical condition, the form, and the conceptual framing of these spaces. However, as it has become so enervatingly palpable in the recent years, for example, with the decay and dismal condition of many schools, like in Berlin, learning environments are material objects as much as they are spaces of the performance of learning. They may become subjected to carelessness and lack of maintenance, or they become targeted as being spaces that nurture critical thinking, civic unrest, or simply non-hierarchical, equitable ways of practicing education. A potential chronological endpoint of education, of the education shock project, may thus be the demolition of the campus of the University of Vincennes in Paris that had been erected within a very short span of time in the aftermath of 1968. In the 1970s, this nondescript architecture quickly became a site of radical learning and organizing. Thinkers such as Hélène Gijoux, Gilles Deleuze, or Michel Foucault have been teaching here. And the simple prefab structures and the open airspace between them, in all their Arcadian profanity, were experienced by those who worked and studied there, many of them coming from abroad and from the former French colonies, as a highly liberating and empowering environment. Obviously a bit too liberating and too empowering in the eyes of the French authorities, who decided to have the entire campus scraped and demolished in 1918, 11 years after it has been erected. It is only one of many cases across the globe that signaled since the mid-1970s a rollback in educational politics and an end to the experimental expansionism and spatial politics of the preceding years. Thus, the wake-up call of Sputnik 1 and the crushing of one of the most adventurous intellectual environments of the time may work as historical brackets around the research of, and very permeable brackets as such, around the research that has been done already and that will be done in the upcoming months. Brackets that is around a two decades era in history that may, and this is another key motivation of the project, serve as an archive of examples and a resource to draw answers from for the present crisis in education and educational facilities. Today's and tomorrow's conference will be a moment where we all might get a sense of the scope and the complexity of the subjects and topics at hand, and which I'd like to open here with, but not without having thanked a couple of people. And before, would like to, I mean, most of all, I would like to thank, of course, the House of World Cultures, Bernd Scherer and Anselm Franke for trusting me to run or to be in charge of this project, and especially the team at HKW here, at the Department for Visual Art and Film, and at the Department for Education, for Cultural Education, among whom are, and just name a few, because there's so many also coming in and going out as interns. There's, I would like to name Agnes Weger, Ciele Hase, Marlene Schröder, Dunja Salan, Anke Ulrich, from the One Department, and Eva Stein, Anna Bartels, Dorot Mumme, and Daniel Neugebauer from the Department of Educational Communication. So with no further ado, I would like to then, yes, open this conference, and thank you for being here. Thank you. I will now switch heads and language. Ich werde die kommende, das nächste Panel auf Deutsch moderieren. There are headphones for those who are would like to listen to the translation outside. I would like to wait before this has taken place. Wir haben ein Panel, das auf Deutsch stattfindet, das erste Panel heute, und das wird übersetzt. Und wir haben eine kleine Umstellung vorzunehmen, da sich der Zug von Mark Tergesides verspätet hat, werden wir beginnen mit Monika Mattes. Dann wird Gregor Harbo sprechen und im Anschluss als Dritter auf diesem Panel dann Mark Tergesides. Das heißt, die Reihenfolge verschiebt sich etwas. Und ich würde gerne trotzdem alle drei jetzt kurz vorstellen in einer kurzen Vorstellungsrunde. Wir werden dann die Vorträge hören und im Anschluss daran alle Fragen, die sich aus diesen Vorträgen ergeben, in einer Diskussion, in einem Q&A diskutieren. Das Panel hat den Titel zur Experimentalisierung von Kindheit und Schule oder Childhood and Education Experimentalized. Der Begriff des Experiments könnte noch eine tatsächlich dann eine, also wird im, spielt im Projekt ohnehin eine große Rolle der Experimentalisierung und wird auch gerade in diesem Panel im Zentrum vieler Überlegungen stehen. Es wird einen gewissen Schwerpunkt geben jetzt auf die Situation der Schulreform, vor allem der in der Sekundarschule in Westdeutschland in den 1960er und 70er Jahren. Es geht um die Gesamtschule, es geht um die Ganztagsschule, es geht um Schulformen, die auch neue Architekturen erforderlich machten. Und es wird dann aber in dem dritten Vortrag auch nochmal zurückgehen auf die Vorschul- oder auf die, nicht unbedingt auf die Vorschulzeit, aber auf die nicht in der Schule stattfindende Zeit des Lernens und des Spielens. Also Mark Tergesides wird über Spielplätze und Spielplatzdesigns und Spielplatzarchitekturen sprechen und die Möglichkeiten, diese Spielplätze als ermächtigende Umgebung zu erleben. Als erstes möchte ich Monika Mattes vorstellen. Monika Mattes ist Bildungsforscherin. Sie arbeitet am DIPF, am DIPF, am Leibniz-Institut für Bildungsforschung und Bildungsinformation und dort in der Abteilung Bibliothek für bildungsgeschichtliche Forschung. Monika Mattes habe ich eingeladen und mit ihrer Zusammenarbeit, das Gespräch mit ihr gesucht, weil ich sehr beeindruckt war von ihrer Arbeit ihrer Dissertation, glaube ich, war es, über die, keine Dissertation, also ein, aber eine Monographie, eine wichtige Monographie über die, über die Ganztagsschule als Gegenstand der bildungspolitischen Diskussionen der in Westdeutschland, in der Bundesrepublik in den 1950er und 60er Jahren. Und sie wird heute aus einem, das ist ein, eben auch ein Teil dieser multidisziplinären Anordnung dieses Projekts, weniger aus der architekturgeschichtlichen oder baugeschichtlichen Perspektive sprechen, sondern eher aus dem bildungshistorischen, von einem bildungshistorischen und Bildungsforschenden aus einer, dieser Perspektive. Danach wird Gregor Harbusch, der Architekturhistoriker ist und ein Gutteil seiner architekturhistorischen Arbeit in den vergangenen Jahren dem Architekten Ludwig Leo gewidmet hat und der Zeit Redakteur des Baunetzes ist, also einer der Online-Präsenz der Bauwelt, einer dem Zentralorgan der Architektinnen hier in Deutschland und das auch für unsere Forschung, für unsere Recherche eine ganz entscheidende Basis darstellt. Also dieses Archiv der Bauwelt ist auch gerade für die Rekonstruktion der bildungshistorischen und bildungsarchitektonischen Debatten von ganz entscheidender Bedeutung. Gregor Harbusch wird über heute auch noch einmal über Ludwig Leo sprechen und über die Laborschule in Bielefeld und kurz über das französische Gymnasium hier in Berlin. Mit Gregor habe ich bereits zusammengearbeitet im Kontext der Learning Laboratories Ausstellung in Utrecht. Dort hat er ein sehr schönes Projekt auf der Basis des in der Akademie der Künste versammelten Archivs von Ludwig Leo organisiert und er wird auch in der kommenden Ausstellung ein Beitrag zu dem Architekten Leo haben. Wir werden gleich mehr darüber hören. Und Marc Tergesides ist ein ist in erster Linie Rassismusforscher und Rassismushistoriker, der aber immer wieder seine Überlegungen und seine Interventionen in den Diskurs rund um Interkultur, um Antirassismus und Migration mit Ausflügen in andere Bereiche ergänzt. Ich habe mit Marc Tergesides schon sehr viel zusammengearbeitet, muss ich in diesem Zusammenhang was sagen, habe mit ihm Bücher zusammengeschrieben und habe ihn jetzt dazu, weil ich wusste, dass er sich für Spielplatzarchitektur interessiert und schon seit langem habe ich ihn jetzt dazu gebracht, diesen Vortrag und diesen Beitrag auch zur Ausstellung zu Spielplätzen zu erarbeiten. Vielleicht nur eine Veröffentlichung, weil sie ganz neu und frisch ist und viel diskutiert wird derzeit, genannt aus seinem Portfolio, das ist Wessen Erinnerung zählt, koloniale Vergangenheit und Rassismus heute, 2019 erschienen bei Hoffmann und Campe. Ja, vielleicht sollte ich es dabei belassen. Sie können alle weiteren Informationen zu den Referentinnen, es sind sehr viel mehr, natürlich all die Veröffentlichungen nachlesen in diesem Abendzettel. Und dann würde ich bitten, das Monika Mattes zu begrüßen und ich freue mich auf Ihren Vortrag. Danke. Applaus